Stella isn't the only one who got her groove back, guys. The Nets in action last night, taking down the Lakers, winners of five straight. Stephen A. Smith, should they be the favorites to win it all?
I definitely believe that now more than ever, particularly with the questionable health of Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis was 100%, perhaps I would feel different, but he's not. And I don't think he's going to be for the rest of the year. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the Brooklyn Nets and I'm saying, excuse me, you know, like per 100 possessions, you know, they're averaging like 124 points. You know what? They're giving up about 114 over the last five games or so. Got a net rating that's second in the league to only the Utah Jazz, who've won 19 of their last 20 games. The Brooklyn Nets have been absolutely sensational as far as I'm concerned. James Harden is deserving of MVP consideration. How selfless he's been, how the quintessential point guard that you're supposed to be, you weren't anticipating he would be that way, but he is. Kyrie has been sensational. He's box office, and he does what he wants on the offensive end of the floor, and he has amped up his defense as well, and he's held other guys accountable to try and do so themselves. This is with Kevin Durant out the last three games due to that hamstring strain. And then you've got Joe Harris, you've got Jeff Green, you got TLC. You're just looking on and on and on. DeAndre Jordan, we can't ignore what he's bringing to the table. There's nobody in the NBA that can stop them offensively. If they give you anything defensively, and I told you this, Max, I told you this a couple of weeks ago. I said, excuse me, at the time they were ranked like 27th or 28th. Over the last five games, I think their defense has been like 18th. Again, they're not awesome and all of this other stuff, but they've improved significantly enough for you to look at them and pay attention. And the fact that they can go 9-10 deep and don't miss a beat offensively, if they give you anything defensively, I mean, if they were 20th defensively, that's good enough. They're that potent offensively. And I think when you look at the Eastern Conference, I don't think there's anybody that can mess with them. And even though you can look at Utah, Denver, of course, the Clippers, and a healthy Lakers squad. Again, the healthy Lakers squad would be my caveat. If Anthony Davis were 100%, I probably would not say this, but he is not. I do not believe he will be for the rest of this season. It sounds too similar to what Kevin Durant went through before he went down to that NBA Finals game and tore his Achilles. It sounds too similar to me. I don't like it. And as a result, I'm going with the Brooklyn Nets. I think the Brooklyn Nets should be the favorites to win it all, to win the chip.
Well, I'm assuming health for Anthony Davis. I mean, they're going to give him a nice long rest. Don't forget, when KD was in the finals, he came right back and played on that so-called calf injury.
He was
going
about two series.
We were on the road doing the show from the Bay Area. And what did I say? Like, don't play in this game. This is obviously an Achilles. No, the team doctor says, no, of course it was. It was right, you know, the calf bone's connected to the Achilles bone, apparently, because of course that's what happened. Different for AD. AD has a nice long time to rest up. Now, assuming that AD is healthy, the Lakers are the team to beat. They're the defending champions. No one really extended them. The Heat took two games from them. That was extending them. But before that, the gentlemen swept the Western Conference, including a Denver team that not only gave the Clippers all they could handle, but beat the Clippers. Lakers lost one game to them. They lost one game in each series up to the finals, and they still didn't get taken seven games. Now, it's one thing if you say, yeah, but they lost this piece. They improved. Lakers improved since last year's team. And the thing about it is, they're the one team, the Lakers, when healthy. Stephen A., if they don't have AD, don't bother showing up because they might not get to the finals. Probably they won't get to the finals without AD, let alone beat whoever's there out of the East. But assuming AD is there, this Lakers team is the only team in the league that is absolutely elite both ends of the floor, offense and defense. Remember, no team has won a championship in the last two decades, 20 years, with a defense ranked lower than 11th. Now, do I agree with you that the Nets could be the first team to do that with a mid-rank kind of defense? Yep, they have that much offensive firepower. I've consistently said this is going to be the best offensive team of all time by the end of this season, but they're going to have to play defense. So because they haven't really done that consistently yet, I can't make them the favorites when the Lakers are the champions defending and have improved, presuming health for AD. I'll tell you something else. The Sixers are a real threat because not only have they been playing well this season, but they are designed, health permitting, again. Who's going to stop Embiid on that Nets team? Like, that is a bad matchup. He is going to get his. And the Sixers can also shoot, and they can play defense. All things considered, do I like the Nets to beat him? Yeah, I do. I do. I think the Nets will play good enough defense. But that's a tough series. It's not a given.
I'm not saying it's not a tough series, but threes will beat twos any day of the week. And I think that when you consider the marksmen that the Nets can put on the floor all at the same time, I think that spells trouble for the Philadelphia 76ers, particularly with Ben Simmons refusing to be a perimeter threat. That's number one. I think that you have to look at it from the standpoint that the Philadelphia 76ers have tailed off a little bit defensively over the last few games. If you're paying attention to them, we've got to pay attention to that and keep our eyes on that. I think Seth Curry should be shooting the ball more, not less, but that hasn't been the case as of late. That's something to point to. And then I also think about this again. Okay, you talk about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant had strained his calf back in, 2019? I think it was like May 8th. Mm-hmm. May 8th. And he came back June 10th, Mac. That was a month and 2 days. Now, obviously, he could have sat out longer, and we get all of that, and we can assume that Anthony Davis probably will need to sit out longer as well. But my attitude is that if you're holding your Achilles, if you're holding your calf area and it's tinkering with your Achilles, then you know what? It's dicey, man. And even if you come back, I have to imagine that you're not going to be 100%. You're going to be very, very concerned about that as well. And the Brooklyn Nets ain't a team that you want to go through having those kind of issues going on, considering what they bring to the table offensively. So I just look at it and I just say right now, because Anthony Davis, I think that his health situation is highly questionable. I think that the Brooklyn Nets are legitimate favorites to win the championship, to win the title, because they ain't going downhill once Kevin Durant comes back. Kevin Durant is a plus on every level. He ain't a minus.
Obviously. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. LeBron James, Kevin Durant will serve as team captains for the All-Star Game and draft the rosters from the pool of players voted as starters and reserves in each conference. Here is a look at who was voted as starters. Luka, Steph, the Joker, Kawhi, Kyrie, Bradley Beal, Giannis, and Joel Embiid. Noticeably missing Dame Lillard. Stephen A., is Lillard underappreciated?
I don't think there's any question that he's underappreciated, because when we talk about players, we don't just talk about numbers. We talk about when they deliver those numbers. That's the key that got lost, that gets lost here in the shuffle. If you look at Steph Curry's numbers, for example, they're a little bit better than Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard is averaging nearly 29.7 points a game, 7.7 assists, think of like 5 rebounds or whatever. Steph Curry's averaging 30. all right, with six and a half assists. He's shooting better from the field. Of course he's shooting better from three-point range because he's the best shooter ever known to man. This is who Steph Curry is, and we understand that. So I would side with my man White Mike Wilbon when he says instead of one of them starting in the backcourt, why not both of them? You know what? I look at it and I say to myself, excuse me, I don't think a guy like a Luka Doncic needs to be starting ahead of a Damian Lillard or anything like that. But here's the thing that I really, really want to get into. Damian Lillard is a closer. You remember that movie Glengarry Glen Ross with Alec Baldwin, Max, when he stole the show in the first 10 minutes of the movie? Always be closing.
ABC.
That is what Damian Lillard does. The Chicago Bulls know it. The New Orleans Pelicans know it. Everybody, Golden State Warriors know it. Everybody knows it, okay? I mean, Paul George, and when he was with Oklahoma City, they knew it. Patrick Beverley, when he was in Houston, they know it. They said since 2012, nobody has hit more game-winning shots, more clutch shots. Not even Steph Curry. Nobody. Not LeBron James. Not Steph Curry. Not James Harden. Nobody has hit more clutch shots, more game-winning shots than Damian Lillard. And by the way, the brother signed his six-year extension for $250 million. Largest contract in NBA history. And nobody blinked. You know why? Because we know why. It's because of this right here. It's because it's Dame time. That's what I'm talking about here. When you sit up there and think about it, even with Steph Curry, think about this. Steph Curry is the greatest shooter God ever created, as far as I'm concerned. And still, nobody strikes more fear in your heart with the ball in their hands.
That's right.
And the game on the line.
That's right.
Than Damian.
That's why
Lillard.
He's not underappreciated, Stephen A. You just said it. No one even signed for $250 million. No one blinked.
He is among
the most respected superstars in American team sports. By the way, he got the $250 million contract. He's got commercials. Everyone knows it's Dame time. He can rhyme. Like, you know, he is widely respected, practically revered by the national press. Everyone loves Damian Lillard. He is the example of what you want from a franchise player. That's not being underappreciated. Now, should he have been starting on this All-Star team? Yep, he should have been starting. Over Doncic. Should have been him and Steph Curry in the backcourt. Barely over Doncic.
I agree.
Barely, but over Doncic. Does that mean that Doncic is more appreciated? Maybe. But Doncic is,
global.
Damian Lillard plays in an inaccessible market where the games are on very late for a team that usually doesn't make deep playoff runs. He's also 6'2" and 30 years old. So when you look at Damian Lillard, also, by the way, he just got to this level last couple seasons. Before that, he was still great. But Lillard, because he is so ambitious and wants to be great, is constantly getting better. So the last 2 years, he's been playing like an MVP conversation level. Steph's been doing that for 6 or 7. Luka's been doing that for 2 years, too. But he's not 6'2" and 30. He's 6'8", and he's 21 years old. And he plays in Dallas, a much bigger media market, whose games aren't on quite as late as the games are on in Portland. And so for those reasons, he gets more attention, even though the way Lillard's playing, even that's changing. For example, I think most people would agree with you and me, that Lillard really should be starting in this game. Does that mean he's underappreciated? I don't think so. I think people appreciate he's an MVP caliber player who just got there the last couple of years, went from an All-Star plus to 4.5 guy to a 5.0 guy in the last couple of years. I think people appreciate he's been carrying a team racked with injuries. But he hasn't played on great teams. We haven't seen him make deep playoff runs. He doesn't play in L.A. or New York or Dallas or Miami or a place like that.
But it's never been the case, Max.
The fact
of the matter is Luka Doncic is already starting. He's got a worse record. They haven't made any deep playoff runs either. Yeah. He's young, of course. He just got here a couple of years ago. We understand that. But in the end, the point is he's been doing what he's been doing over a sustained period of time. When we were talking about the MVP, his name didn't even come up until we brought it up the other day.
Well,
we
no, no.
brought Lillard, it up the other day. Didn't even come up.
But Lillard
That's
is
the kind of stuff we're talking about.
But, well, don't forget, what I mean is he keeps giving better and better evidence that he's there, like 43-16 the other night.
But the fact that it's required matters.
No, but he was top 10 in everyone's list. Now maybe he's top 5 because he keeps getting better.
When we talk about the word appreciation, we're not talking about numbers. We understand. Everybody knows the numbers. I'm talking about, when you talk about appreciation, somebody in the mind's eye, they automatically come to your mind when you're talking about them because of what you've done over a sustained period of time, a sustained level of the players voted him. The media voted for him. The fans don't, okay? So you basically have a tie. The tie, basically, according to a lot of folks in the NBA, should go to the guy with a better record in the conference, et cetera, et cetera. That wasn't applicable here. Better record than Golden State. Better record than Dallas. I'm just saying you got to look at what the guy does.
I agree. And for that reason,
CJ McCullough, no Nurkic.
Though it's very close, I would take Lillard over Doncic this year to start.
I agree.
But it is very close. And the reason generally Doncic has gotten more press over the last couple of years, I wouldn't say much more press. Again, Lillard's a guy with commercials who we actually do talk about Dame time. Everyone
we don't
knows
talk
it.
About him.
But the reason is because Doncic showed up in the league, years old, giving people practically a triple-double with 30 points.
I guess you've been sitting here on First Take without me, because the fact of the matter is that we barely brought him up, and nobody else brought him up until we brought him up. They don't talk about him enough. He's been doing it for years. They don't talk about him enough.
He's been doing it at this level for 2 years.
I'm on the show by myself. I mean, I missed those shows. When the hell all we right. talk about him?
We argued last year, Steph or Dame.
We just brought it up.
We had different.
Because I brought it up the other day.
Last year we argued Steph or Dame. Steph Curry.
Okay. All right. We do
240
shows a year,
just wants a little more Dame
Max.
Time in everyone's life.
You know what the hell I'm
Lillard
saying. Stop
leads
acting like
the
you don't
NBA
know.
In clutch time points and clutch time shooting percentage. It should be called Dame Time, not clutch time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh, hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. In celebration of Black History Month, First Take bringing you an HBCU tour. Each Wednesday, February, we've been checking in with a different school. Next Wednesday, the final stop will be Jackson State. You know who the head coach is? Deion Sanders, y'all. Primetime right here on First Take. Tune in Wednesday. And now we're bringing in Big Perk. Happy Friday to you, sir. And Kendrick, I understand that you had something you wanted to share with Stephen A. and Max about Dame. Is that true?
Oh yeah, absolutely. First of all, Molly, I want to say this to you and my brother, Jalen Rose. My condolences and prayers go out to both of you for losing Mama Rose, sweet woman, met her one time
Thank
in my life.
Much.
And I just wanted to say that. Now, secondly, Stephen A., Max, I heard both of you guys before I came on talking about nobody else brought up Damian Lillard and this, that, and other. Well, that's a lie, because I was the first person to recognize Damian Lillard before the season started when I said he was the best point guard in the league. And then I was the one to bring up him being in the MVP conversation. Check the date, 2/11/21. He's been in my MVP conversation. So I just wanted to address both of y'all like the numbers on the house. Y'all know how it go.
Well,
talking
let me say,
about we was the first people to bring it up and all this.
Well, bring that up with Stephen A. I didn't say anything.
Well, first of all.
Well, whoever said it. Stephen A, you know you said
it. Damn it, it was me. Damn it, it was me, okay? And I got a perfect explanation, Kendrick Perkins, why I missed that. I dare say, you know what? I forgot about Big Perk, because Big Perk's so busy these days. He on Stephen A's World. He on The Jump all the time. I don't know what show Big Perk's going to be on next. Maybe it's because I haven't seen you enough here that I didn't recall you saying that, because you so busy at Big Time. You know, say you didn't come on to remind us when you needed to remind us. Maybe that's what it was, Big Perk.
Well, maybe if you stop being so big time and follow your brother Big Perk back on Twitter, then you could keep up with what's going on.
Carry on.
He got me there. He got me there.
Mm-hmm. We're going to leave that one there, and I want to get to this Nets-Lakers game because, Perk, I hadn't heard from you on this subject. So tell me this. Perk, what message do you feel like Kyrie and Harden's Nets sent to LeBron James last night?
Well, look, I'm not going to discredit the Nets in their win. I thought they got a great win last night, but Kyrie and James didn't deliver a damn thing, not a message, because if you look at Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and LeBron James. LeBron James was the best out of the three. He got whatever he wanted on the court last night, okay? But the difference of the game was the role players. The Lakers' role players couldn't make a shot. I mean, they was 8-for-30 from the three, where the Brooklyn Nets was knocking shot after shot after shot down and being the heroes of the game. And look, this is the message that I got last night from the Nets. It was Joe Harris. And Joe Harris was telling LeBron to deliver a message to Kobe Altman and David Black from the Cleveland days and saying, why the hell did y'all trade me from Cleveland when I could have helped y'all probably win a title or contend? I was that shooter that y'all needed, and y'all said I was going to be out the league in 2 years. That was a mess. That's who sent the message. It was Joe Harris. He sent it to LeBron to deliver to David Black and David Griffin.
That's a good point. I can't disagree with that, but I still talk about Kyrie and James Harden sending a message in terms of their selflessness. I don't think we can minimize that, Big Perk, because if you're going on the court and you're unselfish enough to make sure that you get those other cats involved and you show them it ain't just about the big three. It's not just about me, if I'm Harden and Kyrie and KD. It's not just about us. It's about TLC. It's about Joe Harris. It's about a Jeff Green. It's about a Landry Shamet. It's about those guys as well. And you're distributing the basketball in a fashion that was reminiscent of what we saw from Steve Nash when he was a point guard in Phoenix under Mike D'Antoni. I think that when you're doing those kind of things, that's the kind of stuff that lends itself towards this team being successful, because we recognize it's not about ego driven. It's about the bottom line. They're on a mission to win the championship. They're not on a mission to lead the league in scoring. They're not on a mission to show the world how great they are. All three of them seem incredibly comfortable in the fact that they've already proven that to basketball lovers the world over. Now it's about closing the deal and winning the chip. Kyrie's got one. KD's got two. James Harden doesn't have one. He's starving for one and clearly is willing to do whatever it takes with running this team to show that he's committed to doing just that. So when I saw that last night, I said, excuse me, that along with their elevated level of defensive play, that said something to me, and that's why I'm not going to omit their contribution.
I hate to agree with Stephen A., although I love to disagree with Perk, so I guess I get that. But he's right, Perk. I mean, like, what last night was about, game-recognized game, Harden and Kyrie, anytime they've ever been, well, especially Harden, when he's been called selfish, it's been unfair. You know, both of those guys recognized on teams they've played on, especially in the recent past, the ball in their hand, gave the team the best chance to win. But in each other, and how are they going to share one ball in that backcourt? That was the whole key. And in each other, what they see is, oh, that's another dude on my level. Not just like Westbrook obviously is great, but he's not going to score from anywhere. He's not going to shoot like these two can. These two guys played unselfish basketball. Kyrie, he missed a bunch of threes, right? But Kyrie hit some tough shots down the stretch. But more than that, they're moving the ball. The reason the role players are having success is because Kyrie and James Harden are unselfishly moving the ball. And, of course, because you have to pay attention to those guys, role players are wide open. I mean, obviously, Joe Harris can shoot. TLC's killing you from the corner because these guys are willing to not just make the assist as the clock is running out, but the hockey assist to make the pass that leads to the assist. Both of those guys, what they've shown, the message they sent LeBron was, we are willing to do what it takes to be great. Not just put up numbers, but to try to win a championship. That's the message.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not disagreeing with that, right? Because I'm a strong believer, as being a former champion, that you have to get your role players involved because they help you win playoff series. And also, when you get your role players involved offensively, then they actually want to play defense. That's why the Brooklyn Nets defense has taken a tremendous leap. But what I'm going to say this, I have yet to see it with the big three on the court. Yes, we're seeing it with James Harden and Kyrie Irving on the court, but what happens when Kevin Durant get back in the mix? We don't see that same type of ball movement. So until I see that once the big three is back together and the ball is skipping and hopping, then I will.
You worry about say, KD's okay,
whoa, hold it, whoa, 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 KP, big perk. I'm almost like Fred Sanford about to have a heart attack here. You are a man that is a fool. You are more. Watch your mouth. Be respectful. Here's the deal.
I'm coming to join you as playing
with KD. You trying to tell me that you worried about ball movement once KD comes back?
No, I'm not. I'm telling you, with the sample size that we have seen with the big three, they have not been moving the ball when they've been together. So when you look at their numbers and you look at their shot attempts, along with the role players, with the big three, when they have played together, it has not been the same ball movement. I'm not saying that it's not, that they are not capable of doing it. And I'm also not saying that Kevin Durant is not a guy that is unselfishly willing to give up the ball. He is, right? He's a guy that could have 30 points on 16 shots because he's just that damn good. I'm telling you, in this small sample size that we haven't witnessed it yet, I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. And I'm going to say this. James Harden needs to get a lot of credit because he's the one that has set the tone for this Brooklyn Nets team for his ball movement and making other guys around them better and unselfishly willing to get Joe Harris and Jeff Green and everybody else involved. So I'm not saying it can't happen. I just said we haven't seen it happen in this small sample size, Stephen A.
There's no doubt that Harden has been spectacular in exactly the way you're describing. He's been great from day one. He rolled out of bed, fat and out of shape, showed up in Brooklyn and gave him 30-point triple-doubles in wins. He's been spectacular, and he's made the whole thing work. But the thing about it is the role players on the Nets, like, we knew that Joe Harris could shoot the lights out already. We already knew that about Joe Harris. We knew, for example, Jeff Green was probably never really the wing player we thought he could be. But you play him at the four? Boy, he could do a lot there. We knew that they had some pieces that could work. We know that Kevin Durant, when he gets back, they get rolling. This would be the greatest offense ever. But to make it all work, Kyrie and Harden had to get along. They had to share a backcourt productively. And by the way, when Kyrie was first reintroduced to the team, they had to figure it out a little bit. It looks like they have. And the reason they have is because the attitude of both guys. They are willing to be great. They put their egos aside in the short term. Who's going to get this? Who's going to get that? And they're working to be great. And that was the whole question. Could those two figure it out? The answer looks very good right now.
It looks very good, but we also got to take into consideration one of the other reasons it looks very good. It ain't just because of them. It's because of those other players that we mentioned. And these are guys that can make shots. Jeff Green can make shots. Joe Harris definitely can make shots. Landry Shamet can make shots. And so when you've got guys that can shoot from the perimeter, the Brooklyn Nets started out the game going small. They started out the game going small. You had Jeff Green at center. You had five guys on the floor who could all shoot threes. You couldn't
Lakers
leave anybody
couldn't play
open.
Gasol.
Now check this out. Now, not only that, then you
Now you juxtapose that to the Los Angeles Lakers. What do you have there? You got a guy in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope who I like, and I'm wishing nothing but the best for. His seven-game stretch right now has been god-awful. He hasn't scored in double digits once in the last seven games. And by the way, KCP, you sat up there and you literally have shot 4-for-21 from three-point range in the last seven games. 4-for-21. That ain't going to cut it. So LeBron James and those boys need help. Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant arguably wouldn't need that much help, but are getting it from other people.
But it's
whereas
not coincidental.
LeBron needs the help and ain't getting it.
But it's not coincidental. They're getting the help because of the gravity of all three of those players. Because
that's
they
what
can
we explained
all
shoot
earlier, from
Max.
Anywhere.
That's what you said earlier. That's what I said earlier. We heard
but
you earlier.
Right. So it's not coincidence when you're saying they're getting the help from. If you put KCP
you need
on
those
the
other
Nets,
guys
he wouldn't
up.
Be in a shooting slump right now.
You need to. If you're what? LeBron and the Lakers, if you're anybody that's going against Brooklyn, you've got to be able to make shots.
Well, I can't say this real quick about KCP. When it matters the most, and
he
proved this to us last year in the bubble,
he
did elevate his game. And sometimes, listen, sometimes when you're a champion and you're on a championship team, you do get bored with the process, and you do have those lapses. I would have loved to see Dennis Schroeder last night, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
All right. We'll leave it there. Big Perk, thank you so much. You tell him. Check the tweets. That's the moral of the story today. We'll
carry
keep
on.
Moving here. Back to the NFL. You have a fabulous weekend down there. The big news came down yesterday. Adam Schefter, Chris Mortensen reporting that the Eagles have traded Carson Wentz to the Colts for a third-round draft pick and a second-round pick in 2022 that could turn into a first round if Wentz plays at least 75% of the Colts' offensive snaps. The trade will not be officially processed until the new NFL year beginning on March 17th. On that note, we bring in our friend, two-time Super Bowl champ, Rob Ninkovich. Rob, we'll get to you in just a minute, but we're going to start with Mr. Kellerman because we know this is his pet topic here. Are the Eagles the losers, Max, in the Wentz trade?
No, I don't know why anyone would think they are. Carson Wentz had what I thought was an immovable contract. The guy was paid like a top five player in the league, and those guys, by the way, in his fifth season, not a second-year player, who, by the way, was once at MVP caliber, that was a long time ago, sliding, till he was the dead last worst starting quarterback in football in 2020, to the point where, you know what happens to the worst starter? They're not a starter anymore. He was yanked. He wasn't a starter anymore. So a top five paid, supposed to be elite quarterback, who's the dead last worst starter and then not even a starter, has a huge contract. How are you going to get rid of him? Well, because he's a good locker room guy. No, he wasn't. He was leaking to the press, or at least it was being leaked to the press, the day Jalen Hurts made his first start as a pro for the Eagles. If Carson Wentz, he has no interest in being a backup. If he's not starting, he wants a trade. Really, Sherlock? You have no, Carson Wentz has no, doesn't want to be a backup? Who does who's a starter? Of course not. But other guys take their benching like leaders and support the other guy and wait until the time is right when they get the ball and perform and lead. That's not what Carson Wentz did. He sowed division in the team. He created a problem. So that guy, who's going to be a problem potentially in the locker room, who just undermined his team after underperforming every starter in the league, that guy, you're going to get rid of that contract? Not only did they get rid of the contract, they got a third rounder this year. Okay, that's not a great return for a starting quarterback or a guy they want to start, but also a conditional second round pick next year could become a first. So in this draft, they have four picks in the top 100. By the way, who knows how low Justin Fields will drop, and they don't have to drop that low for the Eagles to grab him. Or they could just take some really good players with those picks, surround Jalen Hurts, and if it doesn't work out, if they don't like what they see, they bring in a veteran to compete against him, then next year they're going to have a lot of draft capital too. They can draft a quarterback next year. The Eagles lost? No, they got out of this looking clean.
Even if they got out of it looking clean, when you're trying to decipher who's a winner or loser, it's in comparison to somebody. You can't have a loser without having a winner. So if you want to just compartmentalize and focus on the Philadelphia Eagles, then we can listen to your diatribe and say nothing. But the fact of the matter is there's somebody that got Wentz. Who got Wentz? What kind of situation is he walking into? That's going to define whether it's a winner or loser. Of course, the Eagles are better off without Carson Wentz. We understand that. But in terms of deciphering who's a loser in all of this, as it pertains to the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm thinking about the team that got Carson Wentz, and that's the Indianapolis Colts. An Indianapolis Colts team with an elite defensive line that even with a down year because of injuries was still ranked 7th according to Pro Football Focus. A team that took a guy in Carson Wentz that was sacked 50 times last year in Philadelphia. They protected Phillip Rivers. He only got sacked 19 times. Okay? He only got touched a little bit, like 31 or 32 times. I'm thinking about Jonathan Taylor being able to run the football. Even though Miles Sanders and Boston Scott could run the football, Doug Peterson wasn't calling running plays for them, at least to the degree and frequency that we would like. I'm thinking about, even though T.Y. Hilton is going to be a free agent once next month rolls around, you look at Pittman and Pascal and some of those guys, and they've got some talent at the wideout spot. You got Frank Reich, who was your offensive coordinator when you were 11-2. And relevant as an MVP candidate in 2017. Now as your head coach, which is why the Colts made the offer, because Frank Reich said, this dude is not as bad as people think. He's not as bad as he looked last year. I know him. I coached him. Bring him here. Let me have him. And so you got to look at those things and look at the personnel. A top 10 defense, a top 10 offense, fresh off an appearance in the postseason. If you're the Indianapolis Colts, where you lost to the Buffalo Bills 27-24, it was a close game. I'm looking at the Indianapolis Colts getting a guy like Carson Wentz, who's only 28 years of age, if he can be fixed, and Frank Reich is considered a quarterback fixer to some degree, I got news for you. I think it's a plus for the Indianapolis Colts. I think they win in all of this. I do.
Yeah, look, I understand both sides of this. And Max saying that the Eagles are winners, I was one saying that there's no way they're going to trade this contract. I mean, they give him $128 million, $66.5 million just to sign his name. They guaranteed that, and the Eagles paid that. So the winners in this would probably be the Eagles getting rid of the contract, but the losers would be the management that drafted him high in the first round and then decided to give him that massive contract. That should have an asterisk by whoever was the one that said, yes, let's draft him, let's pay him this, and then let's trade him away and try and get rid of the guy that we thought was going to be the next franchise quarterback here. So there's winners and losers in it all, and I understand what Stephen A. is saying about the Colts, and it all depends on how Carson Wentz does. If he goes to the Colts and he's the future there and they get back into the playoffs and win a playoff game, then it's going to look amazing. And the Eagles are going to look like the losers in this deal. But if he goes there and he doesn't do well and he looks like he did in 2020, well, the Eagles look pretty good for getting rid of him, number one, getting rid of the contract and just saying, okay, we need to go with Hurts. We need to go with another guy here. It's not going to work. So there's both sides to this. We'll see how it plays out in 2021. But who knows? We'll see in the season and how it progresses.
Right. By the way, the Eagles made mistakes in the past. If you want to take a step back and say, were the Eagles winners or losers in the whole Carson Wentz situation, you can say losers, although he did contribute to a Super Bowl win in the sense he gave him a really good record before Nick Foles took over. They'd never won a Super Bowl before. I'm sure a lot of Eagles fans wouldn't change the last couple of years and sacrifice that Super Bowl either. But, Stephen A.,
Max,
what you're saying—
Max, let me ask you a question, Max.
Yeah.
Max, if you had a Super Bowl— If you won the Super Bowl like Carson Wentz, would you put that ring on and say that you won that Super Bowl, or did you look at it like, man, I didn't win anything?
You're asking me personally?
I would look at it like I didn't win anything. I would look at it like I didn't win anything.
Yeah, but I understand what you mean.
Stephen A., exactly. I'm getting to the point of this. When he looks at that ring, he didn't win a Super Bowl. He helped the team. He tore his ACL.
I get what you mean.
Foles
But I'm saying fans wouldn't change the past in Philly if they had to wipe out the last 5 years. They would want everything to play out the way it was if that was take it or leave it, because they won a Super Bowl. And he did contribute. He gave them a very good record. But so I understand what you're saying. Overall, you could argue, boy, this is a loss for the Eagles. But we're talking about, given the present situation, what they just did, given the reality of the situation, I think they won. Stephen A., what you're arguing is here's a chance where Indianapolis could win. Frank Reich and DeFilippo, those are the only two, the Colts and the Bears, who looked at Wentz and said, we think we can fix him. But both reportedly thought it was a whole ground up or top down, if you start with his head, situation. They were going to have to rebuild him, not just tweak him. So it's not a coincidence that two guys who were on the coaching staff in the past when Wentz was at his best thought, yes, we can rebuild this guy, which is what it was going to take, right? That's one. Two, if Wentz goes there and Reich is correct and he can rebuild him, and Wentz then has success, and Wentz, who's been injury prone in his career, stays healthy, then you'll be right, Stephen A. A lot of things have to happen between now and then for you to say the Colts won, the Eagles lost. As of right now, the Eagles just moved an immovable contract off their books and got draft compensation for it. A second and a third right now could wind up being a second and a first.
Well, I'm not caught up on the draft picks. I'm thinking about the $33 million in dead cap space combined with a pick that may or may not end up being a first rounder. I think a lot of these teams overblow the value of these picks from time to time. If you can sit up there and trade a number two overall pick, why should we be so enamored with the fact that you got a second round pick or a third round pick? That's just how I view it. I'm not saying it's completely meaningless, but I don't overblow it to the degree that some NFL folks do personally. And I think Rob is absolutely right when you talk about the Eagles front office, but it ain't the ownership, because as you said and you pointed out on many occasions, Max, you still got to spend the money. So with Jeffrey Lurie, even though you got the $33 million in dead cap space, it's really up to the GM to maneuver his way around that. It's not like more additional dollars are coming out of the pocket of Jeffrey Lurie. It's just that the pocket, the numbers that's coming out of his pocket, you got to figure out a way to do the right things with it if you're Howie Roseman. Now we get to the Carson Wentz situation. And let me tell you this, and Rob will verify this, pretty easily he'll do so. Max Kellerman, if Carson Wentz had won the Super Bowl instead of Nick Foles, this city wouldn't have been so vicious towards him, even with a down year like this year. Make no mistake about it. He didn't win that ring, and he knows it. So when he came out and he came to the rescue last year and got them to the playoffs despite all of those injuries, it was definitely an accomplishment, but you still came up short because you didn't win the chip. The level of cachet that Carson Wentz would have had he not gotten hurt when he went 11-2 before going down with Frank Reich as his offensive coordinator and Doug Peterson as his head coach, if he had gone on to win the Super Bowl without Nick Foles ever needing to come in, it would have been a totally different mindset in Philadelphia about Carson Wentz, despite how awful last season was.
But the fact of the matter is,
being injury prone combined with being ineffective and inefficient once you are healthy is a death knell. And that's what happened.
I think Philly fans stuck with him too long, to tell you the truth, too.
They did not. They did not.
Carson Wentz was not good at the end of 2019.
They didn't stick with him too long. That's what I'm saying. They didn't stick with him too long.
I'm saying the narrative in 2019 that he brought them to the playoffs, he played poorly in the second half of 2019. They got lucky. He was playing the worst division ever and not performing very well. He was turning the ball over on third down in the fourth quarter consistently.
Alshon Jeffrey was out. Nelson Aguilar was out. DeSean Jackson was out at the time.
Well, he was playing terrible teams. I'll say this. It's not just the number. If you want to take the big, big picture, then I agree with you guys. It's a fiasco for the Eagles. If you want to back up Stephen A., it's not just that they used the second overall pick. They used enormous draft capital to trade up to the second overall pick to take Wentz. Of course, in the big picture. And then why do you give them the contract and then draft a quarterback in the second round, the very, you know, turn around within the same year? It's ridiculous. Yes, but given what they were dealing with right now, they did great.
Let me get one more topic in here. All right, let me get one more thing in here while we got Rob before we got to say goodbye on a Friday. So the Eagles likely, guys, to turn to Jalen Hurts, obviously, as their quarterback, though they also intend to bring in competition for him. Division winners Washington football team re-signed Taylor Heineke, but also seem to be looking for a QB. Danny Dimes expected to be under center for the Giants, and the Cowboys expect to get Dak Prescott back from injury next season. It's worth noting that the Eagles have the sixth pick in the draft. But Max, tell me this. Do the Eagles have the worst quarterback situation in the NFC East?
No, not at all. See, the Eagles right now are taking a look at Jalen Hurts. They want to see what they have. They'll probably bring in a veteran, give him some competition. They have a whole bunch of draft capital now. If it doesn't work out in the next year or so, they'll draft another quarterback. Washington just gave Heineke a backup, really, backup money. But right now, he's their starter. And the Giants reached for Daniel Jones in that draft, took him sixth overall. He showed promise early. He showed no improvement last year. If anything, maybe a touch of regression. But obviously no improvement. And year number two is supposed to be your development year. And the Giants are married to him because they spent that draft capital on him. They don't give no indication they're going to move on. At least the Eagles can be flexible. I wouldn't say they – obviously, Prescott plays for the Cowboys. They're in the driver's seat. But I wouldn't say the Eagles have the worst situation. No, not anymore. Not now that they got rid of Wentz.
Jalen Hurts, I'm wishing him nothing but the best, and he had some really, really good moments, particularly 338 yards or so that he threw against Arizona with three touchdowns, threw for over 300 yards and a loss to Dallas. I get all of that, but he still completed 52% of his passes. I haven't seen the level of accuracy that I would like to see from him. The jury is still out. Even though Taylor Heineke was just a playoff game, it was just one game. It was a playoff game. It was against Tampa's defense. It was against Todd Bowles, and the man threw for 306 yards. I'm going to give credit where credit is due, and I think with Dwayne Haskins being gone, if Carson Wentz is a plus because he's subtracted from the Philadelphia Eagles situation, why isn't the Redskins a plus because Dwayne Haskins is subtracted from that particular situation? When I look at Daniel Jones, there was no Saquon Barkley, and I like what I see Joe Judge doing. I think that Joe Judge has proven to be a really, really good coach thus far. In his rookie year, I saw them get better every week. I like what I saw. And, of course, Dallas is going to get Dak Prescott back. So I consider the Eagles to be in the worst quarterback situation, at least for the immediate moment right now, particularly when they got a new head coach and Washington has Ron Rivera.
See, I disagree. I think that they're in an okay spot with Hurts. And we all saw what he did against the Saints. At the time, the best defense in the NFL, and he went out there and he carved them up and he made them look real silly. So I think that what we've seen in the last 5 years of how the NFL quarterback, the style of an NFL quarterback, he fits the mold. He can move. He can hurt you with his legs. He can throw. I think we've also been hyper-focused with the Eagles on the quarterback position, and they have draft capital. They have the sixth overall pick. So what do they need to do? They need to build some other key pieces on that roster. They're aging. They're getting older. They need a pass rusher, a tight end, a wide receiver. There's certain things that they need to address, a tackle, an offensive tackle. They have some things they need to look at with this draft capital that they did just get and go out there and help get some pieces that can help them win. So I think they're okay in the quarterback spot. Go get Fitzpatrick as a backup. He can help a young quarterback as well.
Yeah, and they have options. Right. They have flexibility that the Giants don't seem to want to look at, and they're certainly no worse off than Washington.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rob, thank you so much for being with us. You have a fabulous weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. Guys, we have a new addition to the First Take family. Our producer, Brian Bork, welcomes his second child today, his beautiful wife, Katie, who also works at ESPN. Their baby girl, I love her name, Aubrey Jules Bork. And as I told Brian, I mean, our baby's supposed to come out this cute? She doesn't look like she's fresh out. Adorable. Huge congrats to them and their growing family. Max, any advice?
Mazel tov, Brian.
You have three, so you can speak to the difference. What's the big difference between one and two, guys?
Well, you don't know what you're doing yet, but it's the greatest time of your life, and enjoy every second of it.
Greatest thing that ever happened to me was being the daddy. Your life changes forever. It'll never be the same. It's a beautiful thing.
Look at you little softies, you girl dads. See, I love the sweet side of them. Yeah. It comes out every now and then. Guys, we'll talk Monday.